Welcome back to TRP.
Hi, a warm welcome back to the Rosslare podcast. Recently, I spent some time in Western Australia. And whilst I was there, I went to see what the Patrick's Day festivities were like in the city of Perth. I arrived at the pub at about 12 o'clock and I must admit I was a little bit disappointed and surprised by the seemingly tame turnout. Musically, there was little more than a guitar and an accordion. And those who were celebrating seemed to be retired and they did not seem to be full of, as we say here in Ireland, the crack. But I did meet some people and had a rather interesting conversation. So, who am I talking to at the moment?
Thomas McKenna.
And Thomas, you tell me you're a Scottish man in an Irish pub celebrating Paddy's Day. How come?
How come? Because my name McKenna is an Irish name, originally from County Monaghan. On my mother's side, it's the Gillespies and the Kennedys. So they're from Donegal, Glentystown. Been there as a kid, I spent a lot of time there, holidays back in Glentystown. It's just part of the way it is in Scotland.
but tell me, are you on holidays here?
I live here.
And how long have you lived here?
27 years I've been here.
And you?
Yeah, I'm Doug Horsley. I'm from the west of Scotland.
And Doug, You're as dressed as any Irish guy I've seen today, and yet, have you got Irish roots?
I do. I'm married to an Irish lady who comes from County Louth. My grandparents on my father's side, they came from Ireland.
Would you normally celebrate Patrick's Day here or Paddy's Day?
Yeah.
Every Paddy's Day, yeah?
Yeah.
And where's your good wife today then?
She's at home.
That's typical, yeah.
An interesting point is that both Doug and I are eligible for ERA passports. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Fantastic. How does that work?
It's through my grandfather, Jimmy Gillespie.
And you've got an Irish grandparent as well?
Two Irish grandparents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how long have you been living here?
31 years.
Wow, and what about the last couple of years? They must have been difficult for both of you, weren't they? Seeing family at home, or...?
Yes, a bit of a chat. Normally I go back once a year, and I haven't been back for a couple of years. Targeting a hopefully June this year. But it's just one of these things, huh?
Yeah. And in terms of Western Australia, it was pretty shut down, wasn't it? Like, there was no movement here for the last 2 years.
In and out, but living here was normal, honestly.
Well, we've been in WA, or Western Australia, probably the best place to live in the world in the last 2 years.
Because of the security?
Because of the security, all the pubs were open, you didn't have to wear masks. A few people have died in the last 3 or 4 weeks because they've opened up the borders. But up until a month ago, only 10 people had died in WA of COVID in the last 2 years. So, you know, to me, it's almost like heaven as far as COVID space is concerned.
No, I can understand what you're saying, but you got to realise too that, you know, you guys missed the heavy COVID, the beta, which was killing people very,
yeah,
very...
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't seem to be happening anymore.
Well, yeah, and the thing is that the whole approach of WA, back to McGowan, the guy in charge and that, he just took I thought it was a brilliant stance. We're the most remote capital city in the world, and he used that to his advantage. He shut it down. Everybody was on his case in that, but at the end of the day, look at the numbers. For me, it's all about how many people die, you know? And it's 10 out of 10, no? And I am a bit concerned the way it's opened up, and the new version of Omicron and that's going crazy over East and that, and everybody's flying in and out and that sort of thing. The dynamics change. But the good thing about WA is that I've observed that people follow the rules, the check-in, they wear masks and all that sort of thing, and so not too bad.
I'd agree with that, and I'd also agree with what you're saying a bit about being a little bit scared. But somebody was saying to me that WA is the money, shall we say, the money winner for Australia, and that the mining industry is such a big industry here in WA that if anybody in the mines catch it, the whole mine has to close down for 2 or 3 days because everybody in that mine has been in close contact.
No, it doesn't work that way, no.
No,
it's proximity, no. It's how, and the mine sites, they're all testing in and out, what's called the rat test, on the plane, off the plane. Got a couple of friends who are air stewards, and they talk about it, that everybody's checking in and on the plane, off the plane. And when it happens at the site, they isolate them right away, continually check everyone around about it, because it's an airborne thing. So if you're in a massive room or a massive machine shop, the people will go there and no one will catch it. And the people in your proximity will catch it. So the way the mine sites, because health and safety is a big thing in all the sites here, and they've just taken that to another level with COVID. And personally, I think they've managed it very, very well. So I don't see a massive breakout, personally. It may happen, but I'm saying just looking at the practices they have and how they've managed so far, I think they've done well. Because over the last few months, they've had cases, and I've had friends have been on sites, and they've talked how they've managed it and all that sort of thing. It seems to be pretty good, no?
I'm going to ask you a different question now. The weather's been unbelievably crazy over on the East Coast.
No, this is new.
I would say that, look, floods have happened in Queensland. Floods have happened in New South Wales. But the extent of them and the frequency has definitely increased a great deal. Again, Australia has had lots of bushfires. Again, I would say the frequency and the severity of them has been far, far greater over the last few years than it has been in the past.
I read something in the paper today on the Australian. They were saying that some of these lands now, because the marshes are starting to fill with water again, that the birds are coming back, and the ecology is actually probably better because of the rain. I don't know. Have you any comment on that?
I would tend to agree with that. No? My limited knowledge. But an interesting point I'd say is that up 2009, I think it was, 2008, 2009, there was the Black Friday fires in Victoria. And I actually was involved after that doing a review of the 000 call centres in Victoria. Esther was the agency that ran it. So having experienced being involved in that review, I'd never really heard of any fires as bad till now. No, so that's what, 12 years ago. No? So my frustration is that we've got a government who's been in power for how many years, 12 years or so, who do not believe in climate change, and they still don't believe in it. So we've had floods, we've had fires, we've had plagues of mice, we've had plagues of locusts. It's the biblical times, and they still don't believe in climate change. I mean, that gets frustrating. And I've even watched them over the last couple of days, different ministers saying, oh, we've always had this. No, we've not always had it at this frequency, you know. And it's going to continue. It's not changing yet.
So what would you say is the thing you most like about WA?
The weather in WA is fantastic from my viewpoint. It's very.
Does that mean then that you would swim every day, or you would go to the water every day, or you would fish? What do you do with this weather?
Well, look, I'm very lucky. I'm lucky enough to have a pool in my backyard, and just flapping about. It's like being in a dream world. I was brought up in Glasgow, a pretty rough place. Where it was cold and miserable, and
but again, a hot bath, is that not the same thing?
Well, no, I think you can. I personally believe you can cool down if you've got the right environment, like a pool and so on.
But Like, I mean, okay, there's no doubt, the weather's fantastic. But apart from the weather, I mean, the isolation, do you sense that isolation? Not at all.
Well, I've ridden my motorbike from here to Melbourne now.
How long did that take?
Two and a half days.
On your own? On your own, nobody with you?
I crossed the Nullarbor, 1,200 kilometres in a day, you know.
And you're wearing leather gear?
Full way. So it's different, is the way. And once you're here, as long as I've been here and Doug, and I like to get out and see, I've been all over WA. A lot more than a lot of the locals. No? Ningaloo Reef, I've got to say, is the most beautiful place in the world.
Where did you say?
Ningaloo Reef.
Where is that?
It's about 18 hours drive. Yep. But it's way better than the Barrier Reef, because the Barrier Reef, you've got to go in a boat to go out in the reef. Ningaloo Reef, you walk out 3 metres, you're swimming with Nemo.
Is that just going north of here?
Yeah. There's one road. Just take that road. Heading towards Karratha. And
what about, like, on these roads, are there regular petrol stations where you can get your gas?
Yeah. Well, the big problem on the Nullarbor, for example, it's not the same here, is if you've been on a motorbike, I had to stop and help people who are riding Ducatis, which are small tanks, and Harley Davidsons. And what you do is I don't carry spare petrol, but I get their tank and a can, and I go and get them petrol. And if you're in a car, most cars, it's not. Years ago, it was a problem. I first came here in '92 and drove out to Kalgoorlie, and even then, the petrol wasn't a problem.
It's funny you should mention Kalgoorlie, yeah? That was one of the gold mines, wasn't it? Where the gold rush happened.
Yeah.
And did you know that it was an Irish guy who discovered the first nuggets?
I didn't know that.
Oh, the guy called Paddy Hannon.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've been to Kalgoorlie, and there's a big thing about him, you know?
Yeah.
And there's also a thing about Russian Jack, who was working in Kalgoorlie for many years. He wanted to see the ocean, so he walked to Esperance.
How many miles is that?
God knows.
It's a long way.
I don't know. It'd be maybe 800 kilometres, maybe more. So he walks there with a barrel, you know. Puts his foot in the water and walks back again. there's a statue of him in Kalgoorlie.
I just have to ask the question. Are you a singer? You've got such a powerful voice.
Look, I can sing a few numbers. I wouldn't say I can sing a lot of songs, but if there's limited attenuation, I can sing.
I like that. Listen.
Do you know the story of this pub?
No, you can tell me.
Have I got a story for you?
Yeah, go on. Tell me the story about this pub.
Fenians is named after the story of the Fenians who escaped from Fremantle Prison.
Five.
Oh, there was six, but one had turned a traitor, so they didn't take him, no? So there was John Boyle O'Reilly, who escaped originally. I think he got out through Bunbury, got to America. The Fenians in America put money together and bought a boat called the Catalpa, a whaling ship. They sailed back to Wales under the pretense. But they also sent another guy who came. At the time in America, the IRB had one of the members, senior members, was the chairman of the Bank of California. So they sent a guy here to look for property with $1 million bank check. Now, it wasn't real, but it had the full bank. So he came to Fremantle. He left it on the desk because if he's rooming that, and the girl reported it back to the locals and that sort of thing. So he was wined and dined by the governor and all that. Oh, they were falling all over him. So when the Catalpa arrived at Rockingham, it was Easter Monday, and there was a regatta going on. So all the British Army and all, they're all there. So the guy, I forget his name, the guy who was wined and dined, he takes a cart to the prison. These people's, the soldiers then had been given day passes and all that sort of thing. The prisoners, sorry, they've been given day passes. So he takes them to Rockingham, they get on the Catalpa and they head off, but they get alerted. But the guy who was the captain of the Catalpa, was a South American, Southern American, and he fought in the, against the English and all that sort of thing. So, and his ancestors and that sort of thing. So when a frigate came up on him, he put up the American flag. So the frigate was going to attack an American ship. And in them days, the American Navy was going up and all that sort of thing. So they turned back and got off. So when the escapees arrived in New York, they got a ticker tape parade. They went all around America.
Is that for fact?
Getting ticker tape parades. And Disraeli, who was the Prime Minister at the time, contacts the American president, demanding that these criminals be sent back. And that's the story of the Catalpa. And the interesting bit of the story is that why were these men not killed with all the other soldiers who signed the pledge for the IRB? Was they were officers. John Boyle O'Reilly was in the Hussars, which is the elite of the elite British Army, you know?
Was it a fact that the English were a little bit scared of the Americans because they were having trouble with the Americas at that stage too?
Well, that's why they didn't attack the ship. But the point of where I'm getting back to is why was these five who were English soldiers, Irishmen signed up as English soldiers, because they were officers. You don't kill officers. So that's why they survived, and then they came here, and then they could help her.
Now I'm going to pull the plaster off the wound. What did you guys think of Brexit?
Very, very silly. Very silly move at all.
Why do you say that?
Well, one of my roles before I came to Australia, I used to look after shipping goods from an American multinational company all over Europe. And we had to pay duty and excise, and if you were going to Spain, you had 17 copies of this and 13 copies of that. If you were going to Italy, it was 5 copies of this. It was absolutely very, very costly exercise. And to roll that back and not have duty-free, and what the impact that's going to have on the UK economy, because then all your goods are going to be much more expensive. And of course, Britain's not in the middle of Europe. The middle of Europe is actually Germany and France. So why would you want to add extra cost when you're in the fringes of Europe geographically? That's rather silly.
Actually, it's funny because, like I say, I live in Rosslare, which is a port, and it's the nearest port to the continent now. And a lot of heavy goods vehicles are avoiding England. They're just not going to go with the paperwork. And the horrid, horrid question, Scottish independence, what do you think?
I'd love to see it, but I don't know whether it's ever going to happen. You know, they've been so close.
And why would you love to see it? Like, what difference will it really make?
Well, I think if you're determining your own fate, then you literally you'll pick your finger out your ass and go and get it done. And it's about making your own life, making your own history, rather than depending on somebody down in Westminster giving you some sort of handout or giving you some work. Because in my time in Scotland, all I saw was things shrinking back into England. I never saw any investment in Scotland by Westminster, by that British Parliament. So I don't think they do any favours to Scotland at all.
You know, I kind of agree with you, but what I find strange was the English used exactly what they said was, we want our own independence, we want to make our own decisions, that's why we want out of Europe.
Yeah.
And yet when the Scottish used that ploy, oh no, it's stupid, it's, we're better together, we're stronger together. I find that quite strange, but
you know, the thing that gets me is the whole Brexit thing. I totally agree everything Doug said. But the other thing I would add to it is, it was a basic, for me, it was an undercurrent of racism, in the sense, and English. And Ian Paisley, the junior, said in Parliament a couple of weeks ago, and it wasn't reported anywhere, he said that the Tories are not what they call a unionist party anymore. They're like an English independent party. I can't remember the exact words he said. And that was so true, you know. And they're just so caught up in their own we are, what do you call it, we are the conquerors of the world and that. Because what they practiced in Scotland, Wales, Ireland, they then refined it and took it all over the world, no? And so, but the Doug said, with relating to Scotland and that sort of thing, is that this, as much as I'd love Britain to wake up and realise you've got to be in Europe, if Scotland gets independence, the European Parliament said, the minute if you get independence, you're in, no? So we could be benefiting like Southern Ireland, no? Yeah. But even Northern Ireland at the moment's got a better deal than we've got, because they can import, export, back and forth and all that sort of thing. But you see, again, I'm not a fan of Ian Paisley or Ian Paisley Jr., but you see the behaviour, what he said was amplified this week, when the British government are complaining about the Irish government taking in too many refugees from Ukraine. You don't see that?
I didn't know that, no.
Yeah. No, Priti Patel and what has been complaining, and it was brought into the press and it was publicised. You're taking in all these Ukrainian people, and we've got a freedom of movement, and they're going to come all over here and da-da-da.
Through Northern Ireland.
A freedom of movement means they could even come from Ireland. Yeah. What they don't realise, especially how dumb they are, is that as a refugee, you don't have a passport to pass back and forward. So they've got the refugee status in Southern Ireland. If they leave Southern Ireland, they can't get back in again. They've lost it, you know? So it's a lie, you know? It just goes back to this thing of the underlying racism, you know? In fact, the head of the Taoiseach, I don't know who he is at the moment, he nailed him in a brilliant speech. He didn't miss it, this bit of mark. So it really, the whole Brexit thing is bad enough, but this whole undercurrent of racism and all that sort of thing, again, going back to what I agreed with Doug, you want to get away from it, no? Yeah. It's not going to benefit anybody, no?
You know, the funny thing about it is you're talking about Paisley. I did a documentary up in years ago. I used to work in the film business. I did a documentary on him, his Free Presbyterian Church.
Yeah.
And it was the first time, coming from the south of Ireland, it was the first time I ever saw a church with a changing room for babies, with toilets for men and women, because all I ever experienced in Ireland was pissing up against the church wall. And I thought, you know what? There's a little bit of decency what he has. He's put two toilets in there. And but it's true. I remember going back to his house and his wife putting on the kettle. And once he's out of the media glare, he's a totally different guy. He's just... And he said one thing I remember years ago. I was working in Germany at the time. And he said that, you're all papist bastards, because you're killing the Protestant church in the Republic. And he was spot on. You see all these beautiful little Protestant churches with no roof because the government were charging tax on Protestant churches, but they weren't charging it on Catholic churches. Oh. That sort of shit. Yeah, they don't tell you that stuff.
I'd like to take this opportunity to thank Thomas McKenna and Doug Horsley for their time and their company. And I hope they're sitting somewhere in Perth at the moment, drinking a beer in the sunshine. Keep on listening to TRP.